welcome to a quick Conversations of Change podcast with Dr. Jen Fram. We have a change chat with one of the leaders in the change management field.
Hello, everybody. It's Dr. Jen Fram from Conversations of Change, and we're back with another 20-minute change chat. I suspect that in talking to this guest, you're going to hear from her a few more times because I'm not sure that I can contain all our conversation to 20 minutes. Today, I am beyond thrilled to have the very amazing Celine Schillinger with us. Celine is a fellow member of the Change Agents Worldwide Network. She has an extraordinary list of accomplishments, which I will put in the blog post because I actually don't want to chop into our time together. Just take it from me. If you're not familiar with Celine, she is amazing and an extraordinary change agent. So, Celine, welcome to our change chat today.
Thank you, Jed. I'm honoured and thrilled to be here.
Lovely. Now, Celine, we knew we were going to have this chat, and then we had a really timely incident last week on LinkedIn, in that somebody posted an article about change management, which I took exception to because it didn't look like change management in my world, and I was concerned that he was sullying the name of change management and sharing what it was and what it wasn't, and you supported it, and it led to this really interesting exchange around the difference between change leadership and change management. So I want to start this change chat off with asking you, how do you define change management, and what has been your experience of it in your organizational life?
That's a great question. In my organizational life, which spans a few decades already, mostly in big companies, large multinational companies, change management has become a sort of a ritual that is disconnected from what the people want, what they are interested in, and it is viewed as the equivalent of this wording rings an alarm bell in people. You know, change management means sugarcoating. Mm-hmm. It means that something bad is coming, and mm-hmm. since the people in charge, people who've designed this change that's coming in some mysterious upper sphere, knows that people won't like it, and therefore put a layer of change management on it to make it more easily accepted by people. And people understand that, and that's why we, my colleague and I, in this conversation reacted the same way, because I think we are shaped by this culture of big organizations where change management has been probably distorted from its original intention and is now in the hands of technocrats, I would say, who don't really mind about involvement and engagement with people. The problem is that change is decided by a few people and applied onto a large number of people. Mm-hmm. And since this process doesn't create ownership, then you have to force feed the change on people. And their techniques, you know, various techniques to make change more acceptable come in. And that's what people understand and don't like. And therefore, I see a difference with change leadership, where here the change process is driven and designed by a broad number of people. It's about making people leaders, transforming them into leaders rather than passive recipients of a change, so that they together build the change that's coming. And in this world, you don't need that many technocrats of change management. Yep. But you, by making people more conscious of the collective and of each other's position and expectations, and where people forget a little bit more their own views and take more care of the collective views, then change happens more readily and lastingly and completely. That's what we believe.
Yes. And this is where I got so frustrated, because everything that you have just described there as your second wave, if you like, is how I define change management. And I think one of the things that, and because you see this all the time, oh, we need to give it another name. We can't call it change management because that's, you know, that frightens people. You can't manage change, et cetera, all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, gee whiz, if we just shone a light onto great change management practice instead of perpetuated this story of old change management, because I agree with you, I'm in violent agreement of a lot of the understanding of change based on, you know, sugarcoating. But if we actually shone a light on what good change practitioners do, they actually do the latter, which is what you've defined up as this ideal state of, yeah, of the change world.
Yes, and I found that in your book, absolutely. And I understand this this vocabulary discussion is, in a sense, not very important.
Yeah.
Because it's what we intend to do that really matters, and whether we're successful or not. But on the other hand, I think perpetuating the change management wording maintains the confusion because of the management word.
Yeah.
Management means relates to project management, to putting things in boxes, to having a very linear process. Management doesn't feel organic, doesn't feel, you know, natural and embedded capacity of ever, you know, ongoing change, which is, I think, why, and this also gives space for bureaucrats and technocrats to come in and own this field. And the more you have people who know nothing about, for example, the shop floor, or about large-scale transformation, or about, and the more you put those people in charge of change management projects, the more you perpetuate this understanding, you know, of change management.
And it raises the question for me then, in redefining the practice as one of change leadership, do we do further damage because we've just taken it actually higher up the hierarchy? So that if everybody has to be a leader to actually have some level of ownership of change or engagement or agency in change, do we now disenfranchise and disempower even more people than we were before? Because, you know, do people automatically look for formal leadership as opposed to implicit leadership?
Interesting. I think we create a more functional organization by having more people integrate a diversity of competencies, including change management, change communications, change whatever, instead of isolating those capacities, competencies in expert people. I think experts, the world of expert is ending, and I think experts should rather transform. There's an evolution even in like communications world from jobs that turn from coach, helping people communicate better rather than communicating on their behalf. And I think that's the same trend I see in change, or the same trend I would like to see more of, where we help people become change managers at every, almost as if we had every single cell in the organization integrate this capacity and this knowledge and make it theirs. So I have an example in my organization, a project I have the honor of to facilitate right now, is a project where we needed to change the way we worked in order to be more effective. We are a big, very complex, old manufacturing company in a very regulated industry. And it's very complicated to maintain a high level of quality constantly. It is so complicated that we were always failing at that. We had a very cyclical quality performance. And every time we felt we had found the solution to that to our problems, and we would need to change this or that, and there you go, you know, problems would be fixed forever. It didn't work. So the whatever the amount of consultants and change and investment, etc., it was always cyclical. There was always the risk of a new warning letter. We were throwing away a lot of our production because of unstable quality performance. To the point, and in this scheme, we always outsourced, I would say, or outsourced the change design to a little group of people, of experts, until a point where we decided to do something radically different and switch to, well, change leadership. And instead of that, we created a movement in the company. We created energy for change, the willingness to, the appetite for change, not directed at a certain target or towards a certain goal, really the appetite for change, to be better, to build a better something together. And from there, we let the people do whatever change they want to do, whatever change they feel is needed, reasonable, feasible, they do it. And we have this massive empowerment of people who then become their own change managers in a way, or change leaders at every level, really up to the shop floor. Yeah. And this is, for the first time in 10 years, producing amazing results on our quality performance.
Yeah, great example. I love it. I love it. Now, you have, within Sanofi, you have also had the very rare experience of working with Cotter International and his team on one of your transformations. Can you share with the listeners what you learned out of that? What was your experience like in taking it beyond the book and beyond the 8 steps, right?
Yes, I feel extremely fortunate, extremely lucky to have had the chance to work with them. I knew of the 8 steps as everyone, I think, from the books, from a few slideshares, and I thought I understood it. You know, I thought it was it made sense. But living it is really different. Mm-hmm. And living this, the implementation of this system, which, as you totally rightfully described, is not a linear or sequential process. It's an iterative and concurrent process. Mm-hmm. I found it extraordinarily powerful, clever, mm-hmm. astute. It really builds capacity in people. It is really extremely well articulated, and it builds on how people react to change or react to the situation of being empowered. I'll give you one example, maybe. The first thing is to define the big opportunity, which is to say, John Cotter says, you can't engage people on a sustainable basis against something, right? You have to find the positive in it, in the situation you're in and what you want to change. And to me, how I was coming from the activist world, you know, building movements and social, and I was a bit worried that we bring in this very established consultant, this celebrity, and I was thinking maybe their method is going to be extremely rigid, and it's going to be difficult to articulate with what I think works and what I think is good for in our situation. But actually, this method is extremely flexible and got really well articulated with our leadership activist approach. So the first thing was to build this big opportunity and bring in the diversity in to decide together, to brainstorm on what is it we want to fight for together. was an extremely powerful start for the movement. And when we spent quite a long time building the energy for change, which is very different from traditional projects that start by the end goal. What is it we want to fix? Yep. And then we work on the retro planning and resources and governance, etc. Here is a very different approach where you start building the energy for change around this big opportunity that you've decided on together. Really, really interesting. Very powerful.
What surprised you about working with them?
So this flexibility was really a very interesting learning for me. I didn't expect that. They're very good at leadership coaching. A lot of this change is actually not about changing people, but changing the leaders. Yeah. I mean, really. That's funny because usually change projects come from leaders, and they always believe that, the little people will have to change. But it's actually the little people, and I say little with, brackets, of course, the little people, they get it. But the leaders need to accept to give way, make space for co-creation, give away control. And that's really, really hard. And Carter was really good in helping those leaders overcome these barriers. And another thing that I really loved in working with them was the fact that we created a blank space for people to operate as a group, as a network, without a boss, without a roadmap. And we let people create their own collective governance without having, anyone higher than another in the hierarchy, because this hierarchy doesn't play here in this system. You know, the dual hierarchy, the dual operating system.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's really interesting to see how people struggle at first to make decisions to create value together without having a roadmap and a boss.
Yes.
We're so used to that. Take this out and people are really disoriented for a while. Then they build the capacities, they become leaders in a network, and they build their influence capabilities, etc. It's really wonderful to see people growing through this experience.
Wow, what an extraordinary opportunity and experience with that. I think final question then for this one, for this change chat, born out of that experience, what's your takeaway on building change capability in leaders?
My takeaway is that it is possible to create leadership everywhere, absolutely everywhere. No space is too far away from leadership. We have seen absolutely amazing leaders emerge from the shop floor, for example. So the frontline employees, those people who are never in change programs usually. And there's an anecdote I keep telling because it was very moving for me to see that. There was this woman in our first network of volunteers who started to cry in our workshop, in our original workshop. And I said, what's the matter? I went to her. I said, what's the matter? She was from the shop floor, from one of our factories. I said, are you sad? She said, no, I'm very happy. And I said, why? And she said, I've been working in this company for 25 years, and it's the first time I've been asked for my opinion.
Oh, goosebumps.
Yes.
Celine.
Yes. Yeah. The amount of energy, engagement, generosity, all this fuel for change that companies generally ignore is amazing. It's totally amazing.
Yeah. Wow. Well, as I said, that's pretty much taking us to the end of the change chat. And, for the listeners, we haven't touched on the work Celine has done to win awards for social media and change, we haven't touched on some extraordinary themes of courage and change, which we could, and of course change that matters when you're doing change which has a social impact beyond. And I very cheekily, before the beginning of this chat, just told Celine we'll be doing another one. So I'm going to encourage you listeners to stick around in the next couple of weeks. We'll see part two come out. But Celine, it is my very great pleasure and gratitude to have you on our Change Chat. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jen.
If you enjoyed this Change Chat, then do share with your colleagues and friends. You can find more at conversationsofchange.com.au, at Jen Fram on Twitter, or Conversations of Change on the Facebook.